Hey there, all you Jungle Johns and Jungle Janes, and welcome back to Tales from the Jungle Cruise. This week we delve deeper into the heart of Dorkness with the second half of Skipper Chris Hames and Skipper Chris Ramirez. Not just the second half of them, we didn't just cut them in half or anything. And now the news and some housekeeping. We're still looking for skips to sit down with and tape. If you want to hear your own voice telling jungle stories broadcast to an audience of dozens, this is your chance. Just email us at junglecruise@gmail.com. Also, if you have a short story or two you want to tell, just record it as a .wav file and email it to us. Shoot us a message. We'll help you through the process if you don't know how to do that. I'm sure I mentioned this last time, but we're on Twitter. Yay! Look at all that high technology. The handle there is @skipcast. And finally, apologies for this taking so long to post. I had a little health blip, and it's probably going to make my posting schedule a little irregular for the rest of the year. I really like the every Friday routine, but it's probably not going to happen for a bit. So just subscribe with us on iTunes or hit us up at Facebook at facebook.com/junglecruise for all of the updates and information. Did I leave out any social networking sites? MySpace, Friendster, Angel Fire, Prodigy. All right, everyone, here we go. Episode 7, The Heart of Dorkness. Up my plans, Chris Ramirez, my evil plans. Welcome to the second half of ChrisFest 2011.
I thought it was a Chris-travaganza.
Chris-travaganza.
That rolls pretty well.
Two Chrises for your money, for your 99 cents you didn't pay on iTunes.
Oh, this is free, right?
It is free. Yeah, I don't make any money off this at all for the sake of not being sued.
Good point.
So,
and as I told Chris on the way over here, that given the nature of the people that you've had... coming before us, so you've had Skipper Kaz, Skipper Benny, and Diego Sella, and Trevor and Joey. How far down the list did you have to get before you're like, you know...
This is scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Let's talk to Chris and Chris.
The bottom of the Skipper barrel.
Well, let's see here. John Lasseter, not available. Kevin Costner, not yet available. Somewhere in the low 200s.
I mean, he was going to dig up corpses before he got us. I'm pretty sure.
So it was the all zombie Skipper episode.
Brains
for half an hour.
It's brains. Look, there's an elephant. Brains. Although we felt like zombies sometimes. I think that was a lot of the.
Some of those were fun though.
A lot of the mystique on the jungle side is an inadvertent effect of the fact that we would do 40 trips a day sometimes. Yeah. Because we had to do the same spiel over and over again, and because you know we had so many issues with entertaining ourselves and the boredom side, I think a lot of the trouble we got into as skippers really was just the fact that we had to do that, otherwise become a little crazy.
Oh, yeah.
So then the spiel evolves, the guests like the little differences, they come back out and they praise us, so we get feed on that level of, you know, of adoration. We come back out, we do it again. I mean, there's a cycle to that, and an energy as you're out in jungle. So I think the amusing question is to two of the, I'm not going to say worst skippers, because you guys weren't bad skippers. Let's just say you were maybe not the image that the Disney management would have wanted to portray.
I can go with that. Yeah.
We weren't the worst skippers to the guests, but we were possibly the worst skippers to the managers.
The question that I would ask you is, with that caveat in mind, what do you think makes a great skipper? What are the things, what is it that you feel that an amazing skipper brings to the boat ride?
Shit, if I knew that, I'd still be doing it. I think that you got to have... The biggest thing with being a skipper is you got to have good timing, you got to have good poise, and you got to be able to work with what your audience gives you. Because a lot of the times your audience is not terribly responsive because they've been in the park possibly for 6 hours to that point, walking around, surrounded by screaming children with their own screaming children, and yeah, they just want to sit somewhere for 8 minutes while someone talks in their ear and they don't really have to react. And then if you can work with that and find out in those first few jokes you tell them, you know, what kind of audience you've got, then yeah, you can have a really good boat and you can be really good. And it's those kind of people that are adaptable to any situation that make a good skipper.
I think when I first got there, one of the first things that I noticed was that the people that were there were genuinely funny. There's a guy, we used to refer to him as Eric with a K, who made a living...
I know where this is going.
Who made a living before he got to Jungle Cruise working in a fast food restaurant, but he would write a tip, put a tip jar on there. And it was just little things like that. And he, you know, he made a sign that said, you know, serving you since whatever. So it was little things like that. It's just people that were naturally funny and naturally had a good sense of humor and that could, yeah, roll with the punches. And when I was there, it was very much, you had to earn your place out on the Jungle Cruise. And so you had to have kind of a thick skin. And, you know, you would be thrown into a situation where you would be handed some stupid prop or something and say, hey, find the funny in this, you know, make me laugh.
Find the funny was
a good one, you know, or doc joke, and you wouldn't be told what the doc joke was. You would just be, you know, expected
to make one
or to roll along with the punches. And so I think you've got to have that mentality. I think you've got to want to be there. When I got trained at Jungle, there was a distinct lack of people that wanted to get trained at Jungle. And I remember going up to a manager and saying, hey, I would like to work the Jungle Cruise. And his reaction was, why? Really?
I had to fight for that, too.
Yeah. And so it used to kind of have to be a place that you would fight for and that you had to really want to be. Because not a whole lot of people wanted to be out there. And not to toot our own horn, but I think that this group here, this class here of Jungle Cruise skippers, really made it kind of a place that you wanted to be at again, made it the cool place again to work. We were the rowdy kids who sat in the back of the tram at the end of the night. And I think people that worked in the park kind of saw that. Yeah, responded to that and knew what we were doing out there. So
we definitely looked forward to your week when you saw you had all Jungle shifts. If you had one of those guest control shifts, if you had something that wasn't Jungle, it wasn't going to be the same week.
Unless it was 5 days of Tiki Opens.
Oh, God, even that. I mean, Tiki Room's all right, but then you just sit there. And you just, yeah. I like being on a boat. Driving around in circles.
And
talking,
you know,
to myself.
And being on a boat has followed you for the entire rest of your life.
But
so.
I do have done a lot of things with boats, yes.
Yes, boats.
Real boats.
So as far as other, you know, Jungle stores, I actually, there are very, very few people who I met that I remember my first time meeting them. We talked about with Joey and Trevor that Trevor remembered the first time he met Joey.
Drunk that time.
Yeah. I remember in my training group, which was trained by Kaz and Amanda were the trainers, and it was me and Greg Riley and Ron and a lady named Carolyn who I remember lasted...
Was that the redhead?
The redhead.
Oh, yeah, I remember her.
And I think she lasted a few months. She didn't stay very long.
She didn't last long
at
all.
She was super sweet, but just didn't.
She reminded me a lot... Yeah. Almost no one's going to get this. She reminded me of Donna Noble on Doctor Who.
Huh.
So if you had seen Doctor Who, you might know that. So welcome to references that went over everyone's head.
Cricket.
But I remember... Cricket. I remember sitting backstage in the boat going over rotations... And Chris, you leaned over the rail in the boat and you said, oh, Kaz, these are your new trainees? And Kaz had said, yeah. He said, you looked over all of us and like, yeah, no, not really. And you just walked off. That was my first impression of Chris Ramirez. So
huge flaming douchebag.
No, really, because that's
the first impression you're trying to get across.
Well, that's actually printed on my business card now. Just so people, and really, that speaks to the way that when I got there, that's how it was.
It was a clubhouse. It was a giant freaking. It was Pee-wee's Playhouse on the water.
And you kept your head down, and you kept, you know, your mouth closed, and you waited for your time to shine, and you know, You waited for...
I didn't wait for Time to Shine because that was one of the worst things they ever did at DCA.
Time to Shine.
That was terrible.
That and Steps in Time.
No, you know what? The second Steps in Time was bad. The first one, the one that they did in cast previews, was actually pretty good. At the Hyperion Theater when Disney's California Adventure opened so many years ago.
Yes, that was a long time ago.
How did that work out for them, by the way?
Yeah. I'm old. That's what we're saying.
Retheming this entire park to the way it should have been when it opened.
Oh, wait, no Wolfgang Puck restaurant? Oh, no McDonald's restaurant?
Robert Mondavi?
It was like the bipolar opposite that they had going on there. It was...
You like Gladiators, Timmy?
Oh, I was so sad when he passed away.
Oh.
So I remember you. Chris, I don't remember how the hell we met, basically.
I don't either, but I remember talking about cameras with you in the back, sitting on that fire hose, or not in the fire hose.
That's a personal story.
Skipper Time podcast. Skipper's After Dark.
And that's funny, because that's the picture I have of you, which was how everyone knew you, sitting back in the Skipper break room doing pretty much nothing.
Hey, I did stuff. I was
knitting. No. I crochet a little bit.
Breaking boats, apparently.
Now, do you remember, goes back to how we ended up all together, do you remember how we met? You and I met?
Refresh my...
We were working at the Honey, I Shrunk... Honey, I Shrunk the Audience attraction.
Chris Ramirez and I met on Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, because that was my first ride. That was where, quote-unquote, it did go up and down. It was a goddamn ride, all right? Anyways... that was my first attraction because it also was my first time of getting over my fear of public speaking because you get your first day thrown up in front of an audience of 400 people and they're like, do your script from memory. I'm like, okay, get over it real quick.
Performance aspects.
Real quick. But yeah, anyways, Mr. Ramirez here and myself, we met because he had written something on the board about seeing a PCC marching band and I was going to the same school. PCC is Pasadena City College. And we were going to the same school, and turned out we had...
You, me, and Michael Dorn.
Yeah. From that guy. From
The Next Generation.
Klingons. They're pretty awesome. However, reminds me of a tangent. What do Captain Kirk and a roll of toilet paper have in common?
What's that?
They both try to keep Klingons off Uranus.
Crickets. Giant
crickets. Oh, it makes me so happy. And then, it turns out we had an art class at occultation to each other, like, right after each other. Yeah.
See, it's funny, because with the three of us knowing Jungle, I always felt like we had a mutual attraction.
Oh, it's true.
Hey.
It's true.
Hista must have been fun. Was that...
Hista.
Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
Yes, Honey, I... Yeah.
With Michael Jackson jokes. You know,
it was fun because all of us the whole time, all we could talk about was getting Captain EO back and how it would never ever happen. And
yeah,
well, gee, look at that. They actually did it. Holy cow.
My favorite was always, when you go into the theater, people want to stop in the middle of the row, but you have to tell them, no, you've got to ease on down the row.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. Oh, that was a whiz of a joke.
Oh!
Oh, even worse.
Ladies and gentlemen, Captain.
So,
man, but no, those people.
So we all made it over to Jungle eventually. So what?
Yeah.
I do remember, Chris, your Indiana Jones fixation while at Jungle. Your leather jacket.
Leather jacket. Yeah.
And your bag.
The man bag.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah. The man purse.
Leather satchel.
Yeah.
That's right. And
bullwhip.
Hats, obviously. Yeah. The whip you had. The idol, I think you had. I was also infatuated with Indiana Jones, but I never did as much to dress up as him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is good.
Probably. I don't know.
Explains a lot about my dating career at Disney, too. So.
Well, you're always trying to rescue women from flaming bars. So that... I don't know if that has to do with anything. But...
Speaking of flaming bars!
How's Saul doing these days?
Oh, the only person who I know who ever worked Disney who called in handcuffed to a bed. he called into the stage scheduler and said, I can't make my shift today. I've been handcuffed to a bed.
Well, Saul could clear out the shipping office like nobody's business.
Oh, yeah.
Do
you remember that day?
I was there that day. Uh-huh. There were so many instances of Saul making an off-color reference to gay sex out loud
Oh, well.
In the shipping office. and it was like watching the cartoon figures where, you know,
the dust is left.
The dust is left in the form of the people standing in the
shipping. No, we scattered and ripped our name tags off in the same move. Especially that one time when he ran in there and made some amazingly off-color remark about the amazing gay sex he apparently had had the night before. And all we saw was we all kind of looked to our right, which is where the guests were in line, and there was this 80-year-old lady standing there with her jaw on the floor. And all of us, in the same motion, left that office and threw our name tags into our pockets.
There was... I will say that the art of palming your name tag was never perfected as it was in the time that we were at Jungle.
We all had the magnet ones just for that very reason.
Just that slide it right off.
There was a great... there was another Eric...
Eric with a dumbass.
Eric with a dumbass. We had Eric with a Q, Eric with a K, and then much later on we had Eric with a dumbass. And he didn't last. He didn't last very long. But it was me and Jessica at the load position at Jungle Cruise, and he's trying to do his spiel, and he asks the guests where they were from, and the guest replies in a very thick accent, "I am from Africa." And so Eric thinks it's a good idea to look him dead in the eye and go, "So it looks just like home, right?" Palm the name tag into the pocket. Hit it, Skip.
Oh man, that was seriously one of the best. Just the best moments, like jaw on the floor, but you are trying to contain your laughter because that was amazing. Shock and awe before Bush made it popular.
Yes. Yeah. There were a lot of stunned looks as we were going out in the jungle at times.
Ooh. Well, what about reading the wall at the end of the jungle after Trader Sam? Yeah. So anyways, there's some Arabic letters written on the wall. I have no idea what they say because none of us spoke Arabic. But
Or read Arabic.
Or,
is it again?
Right. That would probably be the better thing. But we're rounding the corner, and Chris Ramirez here is driving, the skipper, and he said the normal joke there was saying something about what that wall says, like, go buy more stuff, or, you know, go pick up a map to go find the stores, all that stuff. But he just looked up, and he's like, and up there, that says in the native tongue of the area, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Very offensive at the time when... terrorists.
I would just like to state openly that I respect all religions, and in no way does that story reflect my actual views on
Middle East politics.
On the Middle Eastern, the fine people of the Middle East.
That's true. Why didn't Tamina translate that for us?
Because he was Egyptian.
They do speak some Arabic. what do you think? They speak hieroglyphic? Come on now.
I don't know what they speak.
Okay, scarab, cat, guy doing a little dance.
Oh, man.
Bird. Guy with the bird head. Guy with the bird head. That's terrible. That's terrible. But it was...
I want to speak hieroglyphic now.
That's like a Family Guy bit there. Yeah, I mean, this was... we talked earlier, the first half we talked about the Tri-Skippa House, and that was the only time I'd seen a group of people simultaneously call into a morning shift by passing the phone around round robin style.
We did do that. We were all so hungover that we just took the phone, and everybody, even including the people that had already been fired, all of us called in sick on the same phone call.
It was, and I knew exactly who it was, and it was, you know, I mean, with the entire morning shift after, and the Tri-Skippa House was basically our version of the Animal House frat house. I mean, it was, what was the name of it, anybody? Pop quiz, what was the name of the?
Delta,
or whatever, it was, yeah.
Tri-Delta,
No, Tri-Delta is Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, well, fuck.
Lambda...
I don't remember, but it makes an offensive word, doesn't it?
I don't remember, and that's I'm failing my John Belushi trivia right now, so.
The result is that every Thursday it was like a frat house. Every Thursday there would be a party, and every Friday someone wouldn't make it in, and unfortunately that particular Friday the entire morning shift didn't make it in. And we called, one person called in and said, "Well, there's no reason for you to hang up now. Let me just have the phone."
Pass it around, everyone.
And so now Chris wants to call in. Hang on a second.
Next.
Passing it along. Yeah, that was very good times. Those years were.
They were excellent. So what? As far as actual jungle events and happenings and all that, Chris, I think that there's, just as Trevor is known for his one flaming, shining moment of glory. I think that there's something that you're known for quite heavily. The famous Ramirez plank on the dock at the Jungle Cruise that was named for you after your water landing. Didn't you fall into the river?
I did. No, the plank was named after...
You have to say this more than once.
The plank was named after Paul Throckill. That was a different story.
Paul Throckill Memorial.
The Paul Throckill Memorial plank. Yes.
Okay.
You did inherit the title, though.
I did. It was one of those... Yeah, I did fall in. Although, it's less... I found out that afterwards, at least two or three more people fell in after me.
You did fall in more than once.
Yeah. And I didn't quite make it the spectacle that Benny did, which is...
No.
In hindsight, I was in... I should have just... I don't know.
He swam the length of the dock.
Benny did, and he spit the water out, like...
Yeah.
And made whale noises.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
He did.
So I didn't quite... And in hindsight, although Brent did make me stand on the dock as all eight boats came in... and wave to them
while you were drenched
as I high-fived guest in my E. coli water,
mm-hmm.
Soaked hand. So there was, you know, and of course Brent's first question was asking if I was okay, and my response was yes. And his next comment after that was good because you look like an idiot.
Spreading disease, what the skippers do best.
Right, and I mean, I came out and Rit is the one that pulled me out of the water, and you know. My shirt was green, and I kept that hat. That hat I kept till the day that I left, and then it hung proudly in the ticket office until the rehab, and I don't know what happened to it after that.
But. My hat turned green, too, but it wasn't from falling in. It just turned green from the atmosphere, so
yeah.
I wonder what my lungs look like after working at Jungle for so long.
It's like
breathe it in during the
coal
summer.
Coal mine.
Yeah.
So any other, because the one slew of email comments, both of them that I've received... after the dozens of hours and thousands of downloads, I've gotten two emails. Just to make it clear, the email address, maybe I didn't spell it right for people. It's junglecrews, C-R-E-W-S, @gmail.com.
Just to make it difficult.
And you can follow me on Twitter @skipcast. Just because,
it's clever.
Yeah.
You know what is even cleverer? Putting that in the middle of a podcast and not at either end of it so people can't find it easy.
Yeah, well, I'm going to... You're right, and that's why we're not in the big leagues.
The 14th most downloaded Disney podcast.
Yeah, no, Disneyland-related podcast.
Sorry, Disneyland.
Yeah, not even all of Disney, but... Yes, number 14. Hold on just a second. Welcome back from that technical interruption.
Seamless, by the way.
Seamless.
Seamless.
Slid right in there like 100%. No one would ever know.
Percent.
Yes. No, the emails, both of them that I've gotten have said, tell more stories about the Jungle Cruise. Oddly enough,
that is the chief complaint that we get out of the comedy show that we do. Why aren't there more stories about the Jungle Cruise?
Well, yeah. it was a drunken blur. I mean, I'll remember one skipper who... came to work extremely, extremely, extremely hungover from probably drinking up until 30 minutes before his shift began. And he stumbled into work, public transit, obviously, and was blearily helping unload one of the first or second boats of the morning. And one of the guests coming off the boat turned around and remarked to his wife, "Honey, this ride is so authentic, even the skippers smell like alcohol."
True story.
Yeah, it is.
True story.
And he was one of our leads.
That guy got promoted to management.
Yes, he did. That's why we're not mentioning names here.
Right. I mean, I had a nickname. My nickname was Miguel Jackson for the longest time. We had these rotation sheets where...
Because he's Mexican.
We would write down. So one of the leads asked me one day...
Wait, hold on. He's Mexican?
I know, right?
Can't tell.
Can't tell from this angle. Hey, got a scoop for you, Johnny. I don't know why I did that. So, you know, we wrote down, you know, you would write down your names on these rotation sheets, and somebody asked me one time, well, how do you say Michael Jackson's name in Spanish? And I said, Miguel Jackson. And so that got written down in my name on the rotation sheet, and another skipper came up and was looking around and said, who's Miguel? And everyone pointed at me, and he looked up at me and went, your name is Miguel? So the story had to get retold over several times.
Yeah.
That day, I think we told some pretty good stories though from Jungle Cruise, me falling in the river, and
what about Skeletor? Skeletor falling in the water. Remember that?
No.
Were you there for that?
I wasn't there.
Skeletor was a guest that fell in the water. That is what we happened to call her because she was as skinny as a pole, like sickly skinny, And sometimes the boat, it is an actual moving attraction that is not connected to the dock in any way, shape, or form. Sometimes it floats away from the dock and leans, and you stop people from getting on. But this woman was pretty determined to get on the boat, and not much you can do when a 9,500-pound woman comes barreling into you. Well, I mean, she could bounce off, but that's beside the point. Anyways, the guy helping her in grabbed her elbow, but she slipped. She wasn't even paying attention. She went right between the boat and the dock and straight into the water and straight back out again. It was just so quick. And
like she bobbed like a cork?
Something.
Is her body mass that low that she could just right back up in the
water? I think that's what it was, because she went in and came out, and even the guy on the dock was like, what just happened?
Yeah.
And you're wet, and yeah.
There was the guest who fell into the river from the second story of the boat house.
That was one of the, because he was leaning out to try to grab a rope or something.
No, he was leaning out to try to grab his kid's cheap sunglasses
from the tarp, from the canopy.
And
he bounced off the canopy. Bounced off the canopy and fell straight into the water, which probably saved him from pretty serious injury.
What had happened is the boat had moved up from no man's.
So there was water
to load, and there was still a boat at unload.
Land in a boat. Yeah.
But the best part of that, you know, the best part of that story, the resolution of that story, his family waits in line for the next 10 minutes and gets on the ride. As we're covering him in blankets and offering him warmth and clothing and shelter and stopping him from shivering, we ask his family if there's anything that we can do for him, and they kind of look at him and go, no, he'll be fine, and then whisk him away into the park to enjoy the rest of their day at the park.
Excellent. So, smelling like jungle water for the rest of the day.
So since we're talking about people that fall in the water, my favorite, all of our favorite people, obviously, were the ones that were in the electric convenience vehicles, the ECVs, those motorized wheelchairs that are just a whole bunch of fun to park and a whole bunch of fun to avoid, and you can tell the kind of people that drive them are usually pretty cranky. Generally, and they don't really want to be in public, and they'll just run you over. Well, this old man was pretty excited to get on the boat. Oh, and beyond that, how many of you people know how well old people drive? Put them behind the wheel of something that they've never driven in their lives and doesn't have brakes, per se. So this guy's coming right down the exit ramp of the dock and doesn't know how to stop. I think he even said, I can't stop, and went right off the edge and into the water, ECV and all, just poof, at the exit. Mm. That was...
Some of my favorite moments were the dock jokes, and our friend Jared, who's no longer with us, but me and him devised this dock joke, and dock jokes are just this kind of fun way to really entertain yourself at the end of a long day, and as the guests are coming in, the guests don't usually understand what's going on, but Jared would always pull up and look at me and say, that was great, and Chris is going to help you unload the boat. And then he would say, well, that's not Chris. That's old man Winters from the Haunted Amusement Park. And I would yell at him, and I would have gotten away with it, too, if it hadn't been for you meddling kids. So that was known as a Scooby-Doo ending. And we had Tiki Room ending, which is somebody would stand above the exit, and it was a nighttime joke, and you would shine the spotlight on them. And it said, now, ladies and gentlemen, the world-famous... Walt Disney's Enchanted Tiki Room, and you would shine the spotlight on them and just,
Buenos dias, senorita. Hey.
There was the Indiana Jones ending, which I think we only got away with once, which was...
someone hanging off a rope saying, right. Run the boulder backwards.
Yeah. There was Spare Skipper. Skipper was another good one. Yeah. There was a trunk on the dock, and... You would only have one guy there. I mean, now you would get fired for something for only having one cast member on the dock. But you would say, well, we're so-and-so. And they would, well, it's a good thing I have this spare skipper. And you would open up the trunk crate, and out would pop a cast member, to help unload the boat. So I think those were my favorite moments were the unload jokes and just the kind of the unexpected.
Just so goofy.
Just the things that really that entertained us. And the guests had no clue what was going on. We got a written complaint once because someone made a joke back when the dialed down the center, the 1-800 call ATT was popular, and someone made a doc joke about that, and someone wrote a complaint letter because they had apparently all that they had done the entire time was talk about milk, and then they ended the Jungle Cruise with the dial down the center gag. And it was a complete non sequitur.
So apparently they just were only paying attention to that.
So speaking of people falling in the water, So I did a game show about a year back, year and a half back. I think it aired last Thanksgiving. And hosted by Alfonso Ribeiro.
Ooh.
TV's Carlton.
Number one
and
on the list of people that should host that.
So they did this pre-screening. Oh, tell us like three exciting stories about your life. And this story was not on that list. But I had told it to one of the casting people. So I'm on stage in the break after doing the first round of the game show, at which I had been obliterated the first round because I made a really lousy tactical decision. So Alfonso Rivera comes over. So
Kyle made a bad decision? Say it not so.
I know. My business decisions, my podcast empire, great resource use. So Alfonso Rivera comes up to me and says, so I heard you saved a kid's life at Disneyland once. At which point I blanked and I was like, which story did I tell them? So I immediately was like, yeah, a kid jumped off the back of the boat and I grabbed his leg and stopped him from going in the water by the boat motors so he wouldn't have his face chewed off by whatever I said. And at that point, I'm so focused on the fact that I'm trying to win this $6,000 that I didn't even think about the fact that it was probably not the story that Disney Legal would have wanted me to tell. So I think that the
By the worst, way, we love Disney Legal.
They're great here. People. I'll bake them cookies any day. I'll bake them a whole plate of Oreos, fresh out of the bag.
Oh, I get it.
I like them too.
Okay.
Sharp as a box of crayons.
So
new ones.
I think one of the most terrifying things that happened was at Front Load. I was I brought the boat up, and Skipper Jessica J was loading a guest into the boat. He was wearing flip-flops, was on a cell phone with darkened sunglasses, and was not paying attention, and stepped and missed the step, and slid, and snapped his leg in half.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, bone protruding out of it, and, I mean, it was, oh, I mean, I know, you heard the snap. It was like dry kindling. And it's one of those, you never want to have that happen.
Skipper Kyle at Tales from the Jungle Cruise.
I'm just like, oh, what a horrible person not paying attention. But I think most of the guest injuries are their own damn fault.
True.
There was the morbidly obese, Skipper J. Skipper Jessica J again.
Tell me about this.
The morbidly obese woman whose skin was so tight that she pulled on Jessica's wrist and Jessica pulled her hand back and she fell back and hit her leg on the end of the box, the crate in the box, and split her skin open like a Christmas ham.
It just it pierced it in one little spot, and then the rest of it just ripped apart under its own mass. And it was
I had a really heavy lady one time. I was unloading at the back of the boat, and she lost her balance and sat full weight on my knee that was up on the dock. So I had the leg up, and all of her weight, and I'm shocked that my knee didn't give out. But I mean, this had to have been 300, 350 easily. I think the best, one of my favorites, was the lady who got stuck up in Tarzan's treehouse.
Yeah.
Because she was so out of breath that she couldn't get up the second flight of stairs, and they actually, and I don't know why it didn't occur to her, catch your breath, walk down the first set of stairs.
Right.
Turn around, and we had to tell her that that was the solution. But I thought it was only a one-way staircase. Those are called escalators.
Right. Those are called escalators. But these are the same people that always pile into the same line when there's two of them. So,
yep.
You know. The masses are...
massive.
Asses. Yeah. And sheep. And that's okay.
It's okay, because they paid our paychecks for a couple summers.
Right.
They did. Some of us more than a couple summers. And I think I really got out before I got bitter. And there's a lot of people that stayed that...
Mm-hmm.
that stayed
you said that
too
now.
Long.
You were pretty bitter.
I do. Yeah, I was there for 4 years. I really should have left after year three. But that pay was just so darn good. And
that's a lie, too.
That's a lie.
It's a blatant lie, sir.
But it was like a family. And I think, you know, as one of the leads put it, it was like getting to...
Like a Manson family.
Right, yeah.
No, that was the thing about Jungle. It was a big, happy family, and all of us were really good friends at work and out of work, and we just could all get along.
And
so
it really was just getting to come to work and spend 8 hours hanging out with your friends, you know, all day
pretty
long.
Much.
And then you would hang out afterwards, and you really... you know, spent your holidays with them and your birthdays and, you know, your New Year's. And so...
Hey, I'm making $12 an hour in this holiday pay.
which is just slightly under what I make now. So
true.
Let's not talk $12 an hour.
I'm sorry, Chris.
It was holiday pay, though. You didn't get that very regularly.
Yeah, right, yeah. So, you know, it was a bonus that, you know, we were working with people that...
Well, that, you know, that goes back to my comment in the first episode about how this whole thing was for... It was to entertain us, because it was our job, yes, but it also was our livelihood and most of our lives, because a lot of us would do a lot of OT, overtime, but, you know, we'd come back from a good or a bad trip, and we'd share it with the other people on the dock.
See, but we have to explain to people who are working at Disney now what overtime is.
Oh, they don't have that anymore?
Well, I've talked to people who say that OT is basically non-existent. They still pay it when it happens, but it isn't like it was when we were there.
I'd have 18-hour days. Holy cow.
Well, I think that it's partially because with unemployment, they've been able to get a number of people.
Oh, enough staffing, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, they're getting a couple hundred applications for every position. And it's a six-month waiting list to get a call back from casting. I mean, it is not where we were, where we walked in and they're like, okay, check pulse, and
please God, come work for us now.
Yeah, he's got a pulse. He can talk. He's relatively intelligent. Let's
no
put him
face
a,
tattoos.
Give him a mic. Give him a microphone.
No cornrows until 2003.
See, and this doing the podcast really is my face tattoo. This is my guarantee that I'm probably not going to ever be able to go back, much as I would like to someday when I retire, a rich, rich man.
Well, since that's not gonna
happen. That's not going to happen either. So
yeah, not doing this is not.
Yeah. So did you guys get a last boat?
I didn't.
I got a quasi last boat. I got a
The Hunchback?
What's that?
The quasi last boat? was that the Hunchboat of Notre Dame?
I had to crown the King of Fools. No, I got to, and I guess it was a testament to everyone that came out, where I didn't get a chance to get a last boat because there were so many people and we were going to do it kind of under the radar because I had, of course, been fired by that point.
That's the word you're looking for.
Terminated.
That's also the word you're looking for.
Kicked to the curb? Is that...
That's a pretty common occurrence.
Is that, you know...
Yes.
Shown the door? The euphemisms go on and on.
Don't let the turnstile hit you in the ass.
Right, on the way out. But I had come back and we were going to kind of do it clandestinely and the management found out about it and so didn't let me have the last boat, but we did get to do kind of a last goodbye. I did anyway, up in the second story of the boathouse, in which I got to tell a few of my last jokes and hand out some of the things that I had collected over the years and leave on a... I got to leave on a better note than most, I think.
Yeah, I did.
We're in my position.
I didn't get anything. I showed up to a shift and they told me to go to the management office and I walked out with nothing.
And when was that?
Oh, that would be December 23rd. Yeah.
Wait, December 23rd. That sounds familiar.
Yeah,
that would be 2 days before Christmas.
Oh,
yes.
I was fired from a job the day after Christmas, after I had spent all the money. That was even worse. Couldn't return those presents. Not from Disney, a totally unrelated company. So.
Yeah. I wasn't liable for the Secret Santa anymore, though. So
that's good. That's great that you got out of that.
Yeah.
So yeah. I had the best idea for a last trip, and I just couldn't bring myself to breaking the Disney magic.
But Kyle, how many last trips did you have?
I had two last trips because I was at Jungle Cruise twice. But the second time there were no official last trips, so it was just the entire day everyone came by.
Yeah.
But the first time I actually had the boat full, and I wanted to get the unload ramp and take the boat out, basically go backwards, go through the jungle, then go backwards to the Indie queue, and take the unload ramp and get everyone off the boat. And take the ramp back and just leave the boat there for the closing lead who was going to be sitting there waiting at the boathouse the entire night wondering where the heck that boat actually was. But that wasn't my style. I was too good of a kid, even if I...
And for those people who are listening to this that don't know what a last boat is, when you leave the jungle or when you are asked to leave the jungle, you traditionally take a last trip, kind of like your last flyby. So you gather up all your friends in a boat and you get one last outing into the jungle. And some people make it really positive and they make it about, you know, telling their favorite jokes. And some people made it really negative
and bashed on everyone.
And one person in particular really made it into a negative experience. And so after that, they they kind of banned last trips official
for a while.
Last trips for happening for a while, and for a while we had the book, and you would sign the book, and so I think after we were a few years after we were gone, it was that family feel sort of
it disappeared.
Yeah.
Although I will, and you know, and this has been another reoccurring theme in all of it. Every generation's jungle is perfect for that generation at the time. And there is no, it was better in my day, or this new group isn't as good, you know, or all the romanticizing the time that you were there. Every moment at Jungle is this little eight minute moment of perfection.
That's what you make it.
Yeah, and the time that you're there is that summer, and you don't get that summer back. You don't get to, I learned that when I went back, and, you know, the second time I was around at Jungle, you know, it was different, and it took me a little while to adapt to it and to get my ego out of the way. But yeah, there's definitely anyone who works
like
in Jungle.
A fucking 2-ton truck to move that thing. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, it was pretty damn huge. But I know every summer at Jungle is a perfect little moment that everyone gets to have, and you know, enjoy it, because that's the only time that you're going to ever get to have it.
And there were some people that came into Jungle, and they were there, and they did their jobs, and they were gone. And
they're the retirees that stared at the girls all the time.
Yeah, or the college kids who were there, and they were just there for the summer and to do their thing, having fun. And but Kyle's right. It is kind of what you make it. And but no, really, we were the best class, I think, out there.
Like anyone else needs to know that.
In the last decade, at least.
No, we were the last good group, obviously, and the last time we got to do...
It's all gone downhill in a flaming pile of...
Well, can you do safaris now?
I don't know.
Then no. Then nothing is better than our year. Nothing is better than flying fire trucks and Kyle heaving a rat into a tree.
Forgotten about that.
Flying fire trucks. That was my favorite.
Yes.
That was...
That was Mike Pooger calling in a 904, which is a fire in the jungle, because as steam trains do, they generate a lot of smoke, and the steam train happens to run immediately behind the hippo pool. And one day it was going by in the morning and belching smoke, and it filled the jungle with smoke, because smoke is, strangely enough, a mixture of air and particles, therefore it's heavier than air and sinks. So it gathers at the surface, and when you pull into the hippo pool and it's full of mist that smells like fire, you get worried, and you call on the radio that there's a fire. And when people think that an attraction from opening day is on fire, they get very, very...
Protective.
Nervous. Yes, worked up, nervous. And they rush there very quickly. And it happens that the Indie Queue has these... If you guys have been to Disneyland, which I'm assuming if you're listening to this and you haven't been to Disneyland,
so there's this
you're
place
in the wrong
called
place.
Disneyland.
Yes.
Right.
I don't think we have enough time for that discussion.
Okay, so Indiana Jones ride, big doors as you're walking down the line before it gets to the Batcave. Those doors do open up, and it happens to be the fire access from the main road in the back of Disneyland to the back of Jungle Cruise. So here we are, we open the doors up, Janice, one of the managers, is there, and she's holding traffic back with just her arms. Nothing to see here,
nothing
folks.
Nothing to see here.
And this fire truck comes flying through this thing at like 35, 40 miles an hour, and there's a lip on both ends.
Barreling through the Indie Queue.
Jumps
across
into the air. This
bottoms out.
And it, like, lands on the other side. Yeah, bottoms out, sparks fly, it keeps shooting into the jungle, and Janice is still like, nothing to see here, go ahead and go through. That was one of the best experiences.
Just going to have you guys hang on for a second, nothing wrong, we're just going to have you guys hang on for a second. Woo! Full lights and sirens through the Indie Queue.
Yep, coding it in.
Can I tell, I've got to tell that story with the code Mickey.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So we got a call that there was a floater.
Which we got a lot of, by the way.
Yeah, and it wasn't, Ratty from Mr. Toad's. It could have been. It very well could have been Ratty taking a nap. But so we had to go out there, and Chris and I went out, Chris Hames, and I had the big net.
Well, it's a pool skimmer.
It's a pool skimmer.
Pool skimmer is what we had to pick up rats out of.
So we were coming back, and there was lots of guests, and of course we didn't want that to be a bad show, so I'm like, you know what? We'll just dispose of it and let nature take its course.
No, you were aiming for the dumpster, which we knew.
Oh, I was aiming for the dumpster.
Yeah, because we were where the piranhas are now. He was aiming for the dumpster, which we knew was right in that direction.
Yes, and I, pretty decent aim. I'm, you know, athletic, as everyone knows, with my time, not really at all. So I pull the net back like a catapult.
Yep.
And absolutely miss. And this rodent, this waterlogged, soaked, probably an extra 5 pounds of water, hits a tree and comes apart like a cartoon. The yeah. legs and the arms kind of go off to the sides. The head hangs there for a second. The body drops right to the foot of the tree. And we just kind of went on. It wasn't in the water, so we just, we'll just... It
once again, send those complaint letters, too.
Yes. Tales from the Jungle Cruise, care of Cease and Desist Department.
I just remember watching this thing. Like, it left the net at such a high velocity that its arms and legs spread wide out like it was flying through the air, like in a cartoon. And it just it hit was. That tree and evaporated.
It was like a Viking funeral. It was gorgeous.
It was. It was slow motion gorgeous. And then we had fine rat mist all over the jungle.
which, by the way, Rat Mist is my Modest Mouse cover band. And we're playing Coachella this year, just in case you didn't know that. Very good. Little Pollen Storm reference there. Little shout out. But no, those were the days. I feel like a little Archie Bunker.
On the day Finding Nemo came out? When who was it? Josh? No, it was...
When the little Nemo plush got put out in the jungle.
Nemo plush, yes. And then we found a dead koi on the same day. And,
wow.
Yeah.
Found him.
Oh.
I always say that when you get a collection of old Jungle Cruise skippers, it's like getting a collection of old war veterans together. Mm-hmm. You drink a little, you tell some old war stories, and then you complain about these damn kids today.
And then suddenly you're not welcome at Trader Sam's bar anymore. And
is it that
they've
bad
got
now?
Your face. No, I'm just saying.
Oh, okay.
My personal. No, not at all.
If you're David, you post angry messages on Trader Sam's Facebook page.
Were you guys there the day that, this was pre-piranhas, were you there the day that the rubber duckies got made it into the jungle? Someone had gotten like a dozen yellow rubber ducks and let them loose on the water. So for the entirety of the day, you would see this family of yellow rubber ducks floating by the boats as you went by.
No, I was not there for that.
Oh, and then there was, you know, there was a Simba for a while, like a plush Simba.
There was a Simba, yeah. There was a Fine Simba. Was the
game was like Where's Waldo?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Fine
yeah.
Simba, and that was a game for. I think it was for a corporate party, but the Simba stuck around a little bit longer than the corporate party did. Simba in the hippo's mouth, and Simba on top of the spear.
Simba on the rhino's horn.
Yeah, that was
really.
There's a lion.
Inappropriate story. So anyway, so any other fun stories, any celebrity stories you want to tell? Any exciting people you got to meet before we wrap it up for the night?
The only one I remember was I met Kirsten Dunst was on my boat. She seemed to enjoy me. She was really sweet. That's
She's
all
very
I
sweet.
Really know.
I once had Wayne Chokabitch Brady on my boat.
which, by the way, isn't that his tribal name?
That's his...
Speaking of which, that was...
Once again, send your complaint letters.
Right.
No, it was just a great experience. It was so much fun, and obviously we have, you know, tons of stories and stuff that we've probably all forgotten that someone somewhere at some time will jog our memory and it'll...
I remember when one of our skippers dressed up as Hitler for the Halloween party.
That's right.
For our Halloween party thrown by one of our Jewish friends.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
This is the kind of group we were, basically. Yeah.
I just felt like for a while...
You know, Hank Williams Jr. worked on the Jungle Cruise.
Oh.
Yeah, too soon? Too soon? Too soon?
I just kind of felt like my time at Jungle, like there was a red glowing glowing gem in the middle of my hand toward the end of it. Where I knew my time was up. Runner! Take him to Carnival!
Blade Runner reference for all of you under 40.
No, it's not. It's a Logan's Run.
Sorry, it's a Logan's Run reference.
Oh, your geek cred has just taken two points of a hit.
You lose 3 dexterity.
Well, you know, because if it hasn't been remade into a new movie recently.
Right. Oh, yeah. And it wasn't obviously a good old movie because apparently there's no creativity left. Damn it, I'm being curmudgeon-y again.
Yeah. Well, son of a bitch. This damn kids today, give up my
not life. Not original, and they can't do anything by themselves.
I will take that burden off your shoulders and say that Real Steel is Wolverine meets the Transformers, and it's basically
Rock'em Sock'em
Michael Bay's Rock'em Sock'em Robots. It's Hugh Jackman in a boxing movie where he doesn't get to box. But the good news is he's not singing.
He should.
If it was a musical,
By the way, make sure to catch Hugh Jackman in Les Miserables coming out in 2013.
Cats? Anybody? Cats?
All right. Well, if there's no other fun and exciting celebra stories.
I didn't pay too much attention to the celebrities.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were all over at Indy for the most part.
Terry Hatcher in Indy, I think, was the one that she just wanted to ride it over and over and over again.
No, we're not talking about your penis, Kyle.
Well, you know, it is. She was Lois Lane.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So. And there's that explicit tag that we're in. Explicit tag gain. I feel it's like an Xbox achievement.
It is.
I get this little, you know, ding over the top of my head saying, you've achieved explicit podcast content.
Number three.
So, I
do remember Ellen DeGeneres stealing Benny's whale joke.
Yeah, we covered that. It was part of the Pixar team, because while he was working for Disney, it was their property to steal. So.
That's true.
Because it was content property of the Jungle Cruise. Pixar.
Really, finding most of the jokes in Finding Nemo came straight.
Yeah, because how many times did Lasseter ride our boats, and how many times did that whole writing staff ride our boats, getting material? Yeah. For some reason, they just liked what we had that time.
I'm just hoping that they ride the boats before making a Jungle Cruise movie.
They had damn well better.
The Tim Allen, Tom Hanks, really.
It'll be interesting. We should have made that film.
Yeah, because really, the Haunted Mansion movie with Eddie Murphy lowered the bar so far.
It did. They've got a long way to come up.
Yeah, but I mean, at least Tron made it back a little bit, and
Tron was good.
I'm waiting for a Condor Man as a reboot. I think that's got to be their next. Bed Knobs and Broomsticks, sequel.
Dude, see, that's a good film.
That's a great film.
Yeah.
Angela Lansbury was such a hottie when she was like in her 20s.
Yes. Which, it's really odd. I've never seen her in her 20s.
Yeah, because, but now that you see her in her 80s.
I don't know. You're thinking of Angela Lansbury in the 20s. So yes. That's what you're thinking of.
Which would have been just about the same thing. Oh.
Just on a closing note.
Cultural throwback, she wrote.
Speaking of cultural throwbacks, it was always funny to me, and I left the jungle in 2003,
mm-hmm.
How many guests would still come up and ask for a guy skipper?
Oh yeah,
and we had quite a few really funny girls, and the guests would see girls coming up and kind of lean into your ear as if to be super clandestine.
Can I wait for a funny one?
Yeah, can I wait for a guy?
Which I don't really think that boobs preclude senses of humor.
Only because you want to get laid still.
And it was always a struggle.
Stunned silence from the crowd. Apparently,
yeah.
And jeez. It was always just this kind of struggle between why don't the girls get as much respect, and there was always this constant dialogue, and I will tell you why as my closing story. One day in the midst of a rainstorm, the bamboo in part of the jungle came down, and they needed us cast members to go out and remove the downed bamboo and trees from the jungle. Now this entailed grabbing the skiff and riding behind the skiff out behind Swatcher Falls with no motor on it, just attached to a dripping.
Now, why did it have no motor?
Dripping. Well, because we sank it.
Because
someone at some point potentially sank the motor.
Yes, we used to have a boat with an outboard motor that went significantly faster than any other boat in the jungle, and you could just rip roar around that thing. And they dropped the motor off the back by accident.
So the five or six guys on the crew that day all volunteered for duty. And we had the discussion of why don't the girls at that time get as much respect as the guys, to which we answered, it's because the four or five girls were all huddled nice and dry in the shipping office we were out there.
Well, we were doing horticulture's job rather than actually, because I, for $8 an hour, I get paid to take down bamboo, and it actually was always my biggest fear. And you would think, you know, after 9/11, the biggest fear would have been someone putting a grenade on a, you know, giant thing of propane. Mine was actually having a chunk of bamboo come down and having the sharp end of it enter my chest as the boat's moving forward. That was kind of a regular fear of mine, that, you know, I was getting lanced with a giant chunk of sharp bamboo. No, nobody else. No, that was just me.
I'm all right with that.
You're okay.
I got nothing.
That's it.
Chris's was angry Russian maintenance guys.
But I heard that when he went back to his home country, he had to go packed in a box of earth from his home, from his homeland. So.
Oh God.
Oh.
And on that note,
that's the welcome. So anyway, you guys were thank you for one crazy summer as we go Scott Baio referencing.
That was a Haley Mills movie, wasn't it?
Was it? I don't know.
Dude,
she's so hot.
Peter McNichol? I don't know.
No, I'm thinking of One Magic Christmas with Mary Steenburgen. Sorry.
I'm not thinking about that in really in ever. Every way possible. But no,
ever want to achieve an erection again.
Because guys, for those two magical summers, we had each other at the Jungle Cruise, and I just wanted to say thank you for not only coming on the podcast and filling time with me and going back over old stories, but thanks for a couple of amazing years from my life. You guys were the core of that. I don't give a shit, really. No, that's it. That's pretty much all you get.
That works for me. That's enough. Works.
That's good.
So, all right, guys. Well, thanks again for listening. You guys have made us the 13th most popular podcast.
Well, maybe not after this week.
Disneyland.
This could be 17th. We could be dropping like a
stone. I promise you should tune in next week because we won't be here.
Yeah. Or listening. Because our audience is just incredibly shrinking. Wait, I thought it was the Haunted Mansion podcast.
No, you're thinking of the Adventures Through Inner Space podcast.
No, yes. Get off the train in 4 exits, and then you'll be at the Haunted Mansion. Yeah,
awesome. All right, guys, so catch us next week when our next guest will probably be better than this. And
probably?
There's no contest.
There is no contest. We've reached we can stop now. This is the pinnacle. All right, everyone. Four Tales from the Jungle Cruise, saying a hearty and happy Kungaloosh. You guys out there in internet adventure land, keep your eyes peeled. We'll see you next time.